good to be with you guys again. I hope you had a good break doing whatever it is you do, riding motorcycles or... Tuesday, it seemed like everyone just watched like a whole TV series in their break. Did anyone else do that? Yeah. You guys are awesome. I had to study, but anyway, I wish I could have joined you in that. Tonight, we're going to be looking at the topic of friendship. We're continuing our walk through the book of Proverbs and looking for what the Bible has to say about different areas of life. And tonight, we're going to think about friendship. So first, I want to ask you, will you be my friend?
Yes.
No. That's nice. No one on Tuesday answered. They all just kind of sat there and stumped butts. I'm not searching. I'm not that needy, even though, you know, I do count many of you as friends. But this is the question that my wife, Kirby, was asked when she was about 6 years old by another girl at swimming lessons. Do you want to be friends? And, you know, that's cute when you're six, and maybe you experience those times when people... I remember in kindergarten, if you had a birthday party, all of a sudden... You were asked, invite me and I'll be your best friend. I don't know if that happened to you, but friendship at that time seems to function differently. But, well, Kirby had this reaction when she was even six. She had this reaction of slight bewilderment and confusion. Because friendship doesn't really work like that, does it? You can't just go up to someone and ask to be their friend and all of a sudden it works. Friendships take time to form and time to forge. And yet, something like every 20 minutes, 2 million friend requests are given on Facebook. And most of us, I would guess, have hundreds of these friends on Facebook, where people who are connected, who are tethered to one another with our devices, are able to communicate and connect across time and space. But I wonder if, in a way, we embody a sort of ambivalence about friendship. See, on the one hand, we naturally connect. We, particularly our generation, are constantly connected with hundreds, even thousands of people. But on the other hand, I don't know about you, but I kind of resonate with the six-year-old Kirby's reaction to that girl, to kind of know that friendships need a context. They need a foundation to function. They don't just happen out of thin air. They're more complex than that. See, it's no secret that Facebook has dramatically shifted how we relate to each other and how I even think we think about friendship. See, the potential for me to connect with people since Facebook, since about 7 years ago, has just exploded. But so too has our understanding of friendship, I think, started to shift and change. See, the stats show that we increasingly are substituting face-to-face time with Facebook time. First, we brought along things like the mobile phone, where it was so we could talk to anyone at any time. But next came the text message, which was originally designed to be when you didn't have time to call someone, but now that's the dominant mode of communication, isn't it? How many times do you text someone rather than call? Even if it means 42 texts in a row back and forth. And trust me, we know this, us Credo staff, because every year... when we try and call you, you don't pick up. But you'll happily respond to a text. We're on to you. We know. Now, I'm not saying that this is necessarily bad, right? I'm not out there to condemn Facebook as evil, nor to say that the technological developments that we have haven't given us many good things. But I am saying that the negative effects are definitely starting to show themselves. See, maybe you constantly feel like you don't have enough time to keep up with those that you count as friends. Maybe you're tempted, noticeably or not, to construct your profile in a particular way, to present yourself into the world with, you know, that gleaming smile and everything's somehow holding together and wonderful in your life. Maybe you just can't stop checking your newsfeed, even in the middle of a Bible talk or on a date. The compulsion to pick up your phone and just check is overpowering. Sherry Turkle, a psychologist who studied the effects of technology on our social interactions over decades, writes with the basic thesis to her book that we are expecting more from technology and less from each other. That as we use technology to connect with more and more people, hundreds, even thousands across the whole world, more and more we're finding that even with those hundreds and thousands, they're just not enough. And the studies show that while we manage to hold or even manage hundreds of online friends, that we are actually reporting fewer and fewer real friends that we can confide in and turn to in a time of crisis. We are, as the title of her book says, alone together. Now, I don't want to sound all doomy and gloomy, nor am I going to say that you should go and delete your Facebook profile, because I know that you probably all break out in some sort of cold sweat and need counselling all of a sudden. But my point is that we live in a world where relationships are complex, right? Where they're increasingly complex, and friendship has kind of got mixed up in this, and, well, I think we're actually quite confused at times. And so to live well in this world, which in all honesty is demanding and confusing and perhaps even anxiety-inducing, we need wisdom. And that's our goal today, to take a walk through this book of Proverbs, this book of wisdom in the Bible, and see what it has to say about friendship. See, wisdom is a biblical category. If you weren't here a few weeks ago when Kian got us started, part of it in the Bible is stepping back and looking at the way the world works, looking at the order, the patterns, the rhythms in creation, and as a result of that, working out how you ought to live according to that, to live well in light of this order in creation. But one writer puts it like this, the quote should be on the screen. Wisdom is when we outgrow our misconceptions about how life should work and learn how God actually built life to work and to work well. And so today I simply want to take some time walking through Proverbs with you. We'll be centered around that passage that was read for us, but dipping into some other bits, and see what wisdom says about friendship, what it is, and how we can do it well. So first of all, I want to look at the reality of friendship, what we have been made for. And my guess is that most of you would think that friends are generally good things, right? In fact, perhaps you haven't even thought about the category of friendship ever, because they just seem to happen around you. You walk somewhere and several weeks later, all of a sudden, that person that you met in class is your friend, and you don't quite know how it happened, but there you have it. It just happens. The very existence of Facebook, I think, suggests that we value friendship, that we actually esteem it highly. Aristotle, the great Greek philosopher, said of friendship that true friends are a sure refuge. C.S. Lewis, the author of the Chronicles of Narnia, who I'll be quoting quite a bit, said that friendship is unnecessary. Like philosophy, like art, it has no survival value. Rather, it is one of those things that gives value to survival. That song, You've Got a Friend in Me, stirs up all kinds of warm fuzzies, doesn't it? That's my childhood right there. See, from Greek philosophy, from Aristotle and Plato and others, right through to popular sitcoms and movies, I think friendship is kind of like a meat pie. That is, we like it, we're pretty convinced that it's good, but we're not always sure what goes into it. Friendship's like a meat pie. Don't dwell on it too much, just accept it as it comes. But the Bible teaches that friendship is actually something that we're made for, and that's made for us. I said before that friendship is trying to work out how to live life well in the creation, but it's under God. It's theological. And a big part of that is looking at how God made the world to function. So to go quickly through this, we see that in Genesis, which some of you have been studying in small groups, you'll know that God made us to be social beings. That man and woman were created for one another. That humanity was intended not to be these isolated individuals, but connected. But more than that, we see that we're also made for God. That Genesis chapter 2 shows God speaking with humans. It shows God relating to them. It even shows God walking with them as if you were a friend. And so God took relationships and socialness and friendship and and wove it into the fabric of creation. He made us into the original social network, you could say, making us to live with him and with others. And so this is why I think friendship is one of those things that often just happens, that we stumble across. C.S. Lewis again describes the start of friendships often happening like this. He says, friendship is born at that moment when one man says to another, "What? You two? I thought I was the only one." Those times when we discover and delight in the moments where you might be at a party when you're sort of doing that, those pleasantries of just talking about interests, but you're not really sure if you've got anything in common, and all of a sudden you find a bestie who has that same weird sense of humour that you do. Or maybe it's that quirky interest in Icelandic folk chanting, whatever it may be. That time when you discover a common passion, a common goal, a shared interest. But I think we also know that the goodness and the integral nature of friendship in our lives by the other side, the dark side of it. Maybe you had that friendship group at school that was just constantly in a state of flux and schism with gossip, constantly people just rifting apart. Or maybe you hear those stories of the elderly who die alone in their homes and are never found for months because they have no friends, no one to care for them. Or maybe at this moment you're feeling lonely, like you have no friends. That university, this airbrushed image you had of this great social occasion at uni has failed to come true. That's been really hard to make friends, let alone keep them amidst the flux of subject change from semester to semester or internships. But the Bible's clear that we were made to be in friendships, to socialise, to be relating to one another. But the reality is we often find them broken, we find them shattered, torn apart by gossip or mistrust, or simply finding ourselves unable to connect, unable to open up. And this stems from the humanity-wide rejection of God's pattern for the world, his intended design for it. And so as we reject God's plan, the way that he made things to be, we turn away from him, but we also turn away from each other and twist inwards on ourselves. And so we end up living life behind a mask. And we struggle to connect with others. We live behind a pretense or a profile picture, and we find ourselves isolated and alone. But we were made for friendship, and friendship was made for us. And we needed to thrive in the world. God designed it for our good. Friendship brings joy and delight. Friendship plays a key role in shaping us to be who we are, in informing us for better or for worse. That's why your parents back in high school always asked, "Who are you going to the movies with?" They know that friends influence you. And so one of my favourite proverbs, which comes just after the reading we had in chapter 27, verse 17, should be coming up on the slide, says this: "As iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another." Or chapter 13, verse 20, "He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm." See, I could quote many more proverbs like this, but a key principle that I think Proverbs brings out is it suggests that our friends affect us. Now, C.S. Lewis, again, I know I'm quoting him a lot, but he had a lot of good insights on friendship, had this particular insight that I think just hits the nail on the head. C.S. Lewis was famously in a group of friends, a group of writers called the Inklings, which is a lovely play on words. We're talking people like J.R.R. Tolkien, was one of his closest friends, and in particular Tolkien, and then another guy, less well known, Charles Williams. There was this little trio between them. And when Charles died, C.S. Lewis reflected on the loss of this friendship and the loss of it to this trio that they had, and he said this: "In each of my friends, there is something that only some other friend can fully bring out. by myself, I'm not large enough to call the whole man into activity. I want other lights than my own to show all his facets. Now that Charles is dead, I shall never again see Tolkien's reaction to a specifically Charles joke. Far from having more of Tolkien, having him to myself, now that Charles is away, I have less of Tolkien. See, by nature, friendship mutually affects us. Like iron sharpening iron, rubbing up against each other, we play a part in forming one another. Our relational chemistry, to put it that way, causes us to come out of ourselves in different ways. So we were made for friendship. Friendship was made for us. Now, let's get down to Proverbs a bit more. That's kind of the background stuff. And look at what Proverbs assesses to be a good friend. And it has a lot of wisdom on this. Proverbs on friendship, just as we come to it, it's primarily descriptive. So it's looking at friendship and describing what a good friend is. But as it does so, it also encourages us towards that. It warns us against foolish behavior and encourages us towards being this good friend. Now, I'm just going to focus tonight on two characteristics or foundations of good friendship that I see Proverbs highlights, that it kind of centers around. But as we think about them, I want to put this principle in place first. As we think about this, I want you to think about being the friend that you would like to have. Being the friend that you want to have. Because it's easy to sit here and listen and point the finger at others and go, oh, they're failing me in this way, that person doesn't love me in that way. But we need to consider the sort of friends we are first. So, first up, friends, according to Proverbs, are dependable, not flippant. Have a look at these Proverbs that come up on the screen. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born of adversity. A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Many a man proclaims his own steadfast love, but a faithful man who can find. Oil and perfume make the heart glad, and the sweetness of a friend comes from his earnest counsel. Better is a neighbor who is near than a brother who is far away. See, good friends are dependable friends. Notice how they are described: loving at all times, faithful, near, available. They're not fair weather friends. You know, the friends that just hang around while the going's good, or when they need something from you, but as soon as you need something from them, they're strangely absent. I have an example of this from my life. Kirby and I experienced this earlier in the year with the birth of our twins. You've got to expect twin stories, right? The due date was approaching in April, and I remember we actually sat down at one point and made a list of people that we thought we could call on, you know, should the need come at 2 a.m. in the morning to take us to the hospital. We thought about who are the friends we can rely on in this circumstance. And it came about that we had an induction booked in on the Monday, but lo and behold, Kirby went into labor on Sunday morning. And without hesitation, I knew to call my friend Kurt. This guy is one of the most dependable guys I know. And sure enough, as soon as he heard my voice and I asked him the question, dropped everything, came over and took us to the hospital. See, now, that is true dependence. But just to counter the love at all times thing, it doesn't mean that you're meant to always be there. Literally, right? Doesn't mean that you're meant to be attached at the hip or living in your friend's back pocket. A snippet of wisdom from me, you may have worked this out as well, but I've discovered that with a lot of my friends, I can't actually be around them all the time. That may surprise you, but I remember the day I kind of worked this out. I was holidaying with my best friend in primary school, and I worked out that basically we had a 2.5-day limit before we needed a break from each other. Because we just got on each other's nerves. Best friends other times, best friends during school. Man, 2.5 days, we just needed some space. So, there's some wisdom from me. But Proverbs also has a great one on this. 25 verse 17, this is great. Let your foot be seldom in your neighbour's house, lest he have his fill of you and hate you. Wise words. And if I was to write my own version, might be something about a leech or, you know, sucking the person dry, but that might be too graphic. So don't be that guy. Be consistent. Be loving, but know when to give space. Likewise, Proverbs says that it's not about how many friends you have that matters, but how many friends you have. Get the distinction? Look at Proverbs 18, verse 24, which I think is a proverb of Facebook. A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. You can have all the acquaintances in the world, all the Facebook friends that you like, but if none of them are actually there to come through for you when you need it, what use is it? But to have a friend that's closer than a brother, that's something special, isn't it? And this is a really important and precious point, because it's saying that friendship can even transcend, in a way, family relationships. Now, this is a big deal for the context this is written in. Because the point is this. You can't pick your family. Okay, many of you know my brother Joel. I didn't choose to be his brother. And he didn't choose to be my brother, but we're stuck with each other. Okay? And in a way, we are obligated to help each other because we're family. So that's why when I was in hospital with Kirby for a week after the twins were born, and they were, you know, the hospital fed Kirby, but not the husband, who did I call to bring me coffees and breakfast? Joel was faithful. He was a good brother. But the point is that friends actually choose you. Okay? Friends want to be with you. They're not obligated. They actually choose to hang out with you. This is something that astounds me sometimes, and maybe in my darker moments, but when I sit back and I go, why do people actually want to hang out with me? Not at my best, but even at my worst. People who actually will stick by me when I'm grumpy, when I'm tired, when I'm fed up with everything. But see, good friends are the ones who are dependable, who remain next to you when life is falling apart. They'll even inconvenience themselves in order to help you. And I think many of us struggle with this. I was talking to one credo student, and I asked him what he thought the biggest challenge was in terms of friendship for our generation, for you guys. And he said it was time. He said that he just doesn't think we have enough time to keep up with all of his close friends. Now, he happened to think he had 12 really close friends, which the statistics say is just not right. I'll get to that in a minute. But the point is that we seem to spread ourselves thin. I do this. I'm sure some of you do as well. Where the breadth of our social interactions mean they're shallower and shallower. So I have something like 869 Facebook friends, which is ridiculous. And while I don't, you know, obviously don't think that I'm besties with all of them, I wonder if there's a background level of anxiety that's caused by that, where I somehow feel like I have to keep up with all of them. You may have seen there's an article or several going around where this guy is trying to have coffee with every single 1,200 or something Facebook friends he has. He reckons it's going to take him 3 years to get through them all. But the fact is, you can't just keep up with them. And the shock is that while at uni, you have all this incidental time to relate. Okay, you bump into each other on the concourse, you sit with each other in lectures. But once you're out in the workforce, suddenly those incidental moments are gone. And you actually have to make the effort to keep up with people. Try doing that with lots and lots of people, and you're going to self-destruct. My advice is work at making time be dependable and reliable for just a handful of really close friends. And the research says that, basically, the most close friends you can have is about six. But it's, on average, closer to three. And I worked this out when I moved from the mountains to the city a couple of years ago, and I had to think about who I was really going to work at keeping up with. Knowing that I was going to make a whole new bunch of connections down here, but those who I really wanted to stay in touch with. So, try and be different. Try and resist the culture of just spreading yourself so thin that you actually have no time for anyone, that you're not that dependable person. And be willing to give yourself some time to others, to listen to them, to be there, to advise them. All right, we're going to pick up the pace a bit, but the second thing that Proverbs talks about, a good friend is authentic, not superficial. Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Faithful are the friend, wounds of a friend. Profuse are the kisses of an enemy. Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, I'm only joking. Oil and perfume, we've heard this before, make the heart glad, and the sweetness of a friend comes from his earnest counsel. A man who flatters his neighbor spreads a net for his feet. And this is where I think we really are tempted to wear masks. We can come to live life sort of peering from behind a mask or a facade, unwilling or maybe even unable to open ourselves up to anyone truly, to have actual intimate sharing of our life. I think there's a range of things that hold us back. Consider that first proverb. Open rebuke is better than hidden love. When I first read this, I don't like it. Because I don't know about you, but I'm a big conflict avoider. And so anything that talks about wounding people or rebuking, I just get all uncomfortable and kind of want to just keep my mouth shut. But you've got to think about the context in which this sort of rebuke or faithful wounds can be given in. When I think about authentic friends, my mind turns to two of my friends, Brad and Josh. These are guys that I met up in the mountains when I moved up there just after school. And we had that moment where we just seemed to click. We just got along, the three of us together. But I think our friendship was really formed and the foundations laid in the fact that we spent a year committed to meeting up and praying for another when 6 o'clock on a Monday morning. All year. And we would pray for each other, we would share our struggles and our joys. There was great trust. There was no need to prove yourself, to kind of put up that facade. There was a genuine desire for the good of the other. And so I knew that if they rebuked me on something, it was a faithful wound. And they did. See, our best friends push us to be better than ourselves. In contrast, to speak to someone and rebuke them without this sort of umbrella of trust and dependence is to be like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death. Where you have this shallowness of a relationship where you joke around and you don't realise the damage that you're causing. And this is something big in Australian culture. When we're just insensitive or not even aware of the damage our words can do to each other. See, if we're not dependable because we spread ourselves too thin and so don't make time for people, then I think we're not authentic, perhaps because we're scared of opening up. But social media has trained us to flick from social interaction to social interaction, to be able to mediate, so switch off when I don't want to listen anymore. But that starts bleeding into our everyday. So we, myself included, I found myself doing this, struggling to be present anywhere. That when I'm actually meeting finally face-to-face with someone, we often, when there's a lull in the conversation, which we call awkward, which is an indicator in itself, go to pull out our phones, don't we? Because we just can't deal with that silence. We just can't deal with that person at the time. Sherry Turkle, that psychologist I mentioned before, says that as we preference texting and emailing, we hide as much as we show. We miss the use of our voices. We miss the use of our faces. So when you speak to someone, you can hear the intonations in their voice. You can see their eyes. You can hear when they're experiencing grief or excitement, and you can respond to that. But we lose that when we do away with face-to-face, when we do away with even voice. Likewise, in discussing confessing, Turkle says, she came across this weird phenomenon. I'm just so surprised by it. There's this website called Post Secret, where people send in postcards with, like, deepest, darkest secrets, anonymous, and that's kind of how they air their secrets, I guess. And when she's talking about this sort of confessing, she says this, quote should be out from history. A confession that once might have been made within the bounds of a friendship now takes place without any bounds at all. When confession happens in a real physical space, face to face, there is talk and negotiation. Confessing to a friend might bring disapproval. But disapproval, while hard to take, can be part of an ongoing and sustaining relationship. It can mean that someone cares enough to consider your actions and talk to you about their feelings. Another author, Paul Tripp, says that we live in interwoven networks of terminally casual relationships. We live with the delusion that we know each other, but we really don't. So I wonder how you're feeling. Maybe the picture that Proverbs paints is just wonderful. You love it. You love this ideal of a friend. The person who's solid and dependable, who's reliable, faithful, authentic. That sounds good, doesn't it? It's the sort of friend that all of us want deep down. But maybe you're wondering how you measure up. I don't know about you, I feel both hope in the ideal and despair, because I know that all too often I'm a rubbish friend, that I don't love at all times. Who can even claim that? That I fail at being dependable, that sometimes I can't even be bothered responding to friends, that I avoid intimacy because I'm scared of conflict, and that sometimes I'll just look at my phone rather than talk to someone. I don't know about you, but I long to be a better friend and to have this kind of true friend that Proverbs talks about. Because the picture in Proverbs causes this hope and despair. And I wonder if maybe we don't have great friends because we're not great friends. That too often we fail at being the good friend. That we hide ourselves behind masks, behind our profile pictures, and we keep turning inwards on ourselves. Hugh Black, a guy who was writing in 1904 on friendship, said this: "So the human heart has ever craved for a relationship deeper and more lasting than any possible among men. Undisturbed by change, unmenaced by death, unbroken by fear, unclouded by doubt. The limitations and losses of earthly friendship are meant to drive us to the higher friendship." And this higher friendship, this friendship of the one who is unrivaled, is the one that we were made for. Not just relationship with each other, but relationship with God. And in John 15, the account of Jesus' life that John writes, hours before his death, the very night before his death, Jesus has his last meal, sharing it with his closest friends, and he says this: "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends." See, Jesus is the truly wise person. He is the unrivaled friend. He is the one who actually does love at all times. Look at the stories. Look at the accounts of his life. He's the one who loves at all times. The one who sticks closer than a brother. The one who knows us completely. My deepest, darkest secrets, those not even my closest friends know, and yet he still chooses to be with us. The one who speaks truth into my life, the faithful wounds intended for my better, the one who lays down his life for us, for you. Jesus is utterly dependable and completely authentic, proven by the extent to which his love took him. See, if you know that Jesus did this for you, I think it frees you to be a better friend. To stop that process of turning inwards on yourself and cutting yourself off from others, and to start to look outwards to others once again. See, if you know that Jesus accepted you even at your worst, but didn't want to leave you there, well, surely you can start opening yourself up to others without that fear of rejection or acceptance. That you can start to learn to love like he loves, and that, well, just like you become more like the friends that you keep, you'll become more like him. See, wisdom says that friendship is part of who we are. That friendship was made for us. That good friends are dependable and authentic. Wisdom says that friends shape and spur each other on. And the Bible says that true wisdom, all wisdom for living well in this life, in this world that God has made, is found in Jesus. Not just in his example, but in that he gives us the power to be good friends. Let me pray for us. Father, we thank you that you made us to be for one another and for you. We thank you that you don't leave us directionless in this world where it's so often hard to know how to live. We thank you for wisdom and for Proverbs. But most of all, we thank you that Jesus is the true wise man, that in him all wisdom and knowledge is found, and that in his life we not only see a great example, but that we can experience the power of the gospel to stop us from turning inwards into ourselves and to begin to love you and others. And we pray that you might help us to be better friends. Amen.